You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. Join me as we uncover the rich histories of North America's Great Plains, exploring the latest archaeological discoveries and past cultures that shape this storied region. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey everybody, Chris Webster here, one of the co-founders of the Archaeology Podcast Network. And as the APN takes a break this holiday season from producing new episodes, we are promoting existing episodes from other great podcasts on the APN. Today's offering is from the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast with Dr. Andrew Kinkela. And the episode is number 168, titled Kinkela Climbs the Mount Everest of Pseudo-Archaeology. He reads Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods. This is a great episode. And listen, Dr. Andrew Kinkela does this stuff so you guys don't have to. So take a listen. And go subscribe to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast everywhere you find podcasts. On to the show.
You are now entering the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 168. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkela, and tonight I review Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods. And my first question shall be, if they are gods, do they not leave fingerprints? All right. So, hey, y'all, welcome back. And I thought I would spend this eve reviewing the book Fingerprints of the Gods, which is the 1995 book by Graham Hancock. And it's really, if there is such thing as a classic in the pseudo archaeology world, this is up there. This is top two or three, right? It's up there with Chariots of the Gods, right? You have Chariots of the Gods, which came out in like 1968. You have Fingerprints of the Gods, which came out in 1995. And then you have Ignatius Donnelly, his book on Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, which came out in like 1880. I always forget if it's like 1881 or 1882. But I would say those are the big three. And they all kind of tell versions of the same story. They all kind of rip each other off. They're really just reprintings of the same idea of Ignatius Donnelly. I would say that Chariots of the Gods, which is the 1968 one by Eric von Däniken, it takes the original idea of the sort of Atlantean super civilization, and he does the whole aliens thing, right? His idea is like ancient astronauts. That's kind of the core of the Eric von Däniken thing, although it's very meandering. And I would say that for Graham Hancock, for Fingerprints of the Gods, his core is that there was an ancient super civilization that was destroyed by a comet about 12,000 years ago, right? And it is interesting, first and foremost, you know, Graham Hancock has been shilling the same old stuff now for 30 years, right? So the book's published in 1995. And this is its 30-year birthday party. Here we are with Fingerprints of the Gods, 30 years on. And I do notice, having read it now, that he has added the comet thing to my reading. And you guys, this isn't because I'm a fool, and I'm actually not trying to, I'm trying to be honest about this review as I go. I don't think there was anything about comets in Fingerprints of the Gods, because actually the scientific, there was this original scientific data on possible comet impacts that didn't come out until the early 2000s. So this book was written before that. So he later adds the whole comet impact thing, which, because he needs something to destroy his ancient super civilization, right? Of course, you know, I need to start out by saying, no, there was no such thing as an ancient super civilization. There is none, zero evidence for an ancient super civilization. And this book is classic pseudo-archaeology. I mean, it is the most pseudo of pseudo-archaeology book. It truly is. It has all the hallmarks where he has a story that he wants to tell you, that he wants to force on you. And then he just cherry picks some weird data. He uses really odd sources. You know, it's not scientific. It's not serious. It's not rigorous. It's none of that stuff. It's just silly bullshit. It really and truly is, you know, and it's a total, utter waste of your time. Like, I was surprised how similar my feelings for this were towards Chariots of the Gods, right? So my very first podcast that I did, my first full length one here at the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, was I did a review of Eric von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods, right? Because I thought it was so central to this whole story, and it is. And looking back, I think that podcast is like pretty boring, and because I just kind of go through the chapters, and once you get the idea of like, oh yeah, this is just all obviously just fake made up bullshit that's being hawked by a shyster, that's all it is, and that makes it incredibly boring. And I really think actually that this one, it's gonna be boring too, my friends. I'm gonna try my best, but it's like once you know how the magician does his trick, you're like, yeah, okay. I will say I did the same thing as I did with Chariots of the Gods, meaning that I had this thing that I didn't want to buy it, right? I didn't want to buy either of these books. I'm like, I cannot give money to Eric von Däniken or Graham Hancock. That's crazy. If you guys remember or ever listened to my original podcast, I think it's number 95 or something like that. I had gotten Chariots of the Gods. I'd found it in one of my old professors on her bookshelves. She had it just as a joke. So I took it over the summer for a week or two and I read it and I put it back, right? No harm, no foul, and no money. So with this one, one of my students was like, hey, Kinkella, I think you need to read this, right? And he had it. He's like, here you go. And so I've had it. He gave it to me probably like 3 months ago at this point. I've had it. I've carried it as a cross on my back in my backpack for really several months. I'm like, I got to read it. I'd read a little at a time. I was shocked when I first got the book at just how big it is. You guys, it is a physically large book. It's slightly over 500 pages. And then there's a ton of like notes and stuff at the end. So it is a physically large, just big mama. And I just, over this last weekend, I was like, I gotta get through this. So I just did it. And I must say, having had Graham Hancock around for so long, not only is there no reason to read this because it's incredibly boring and meandering and false and just written by a total shyster. You've heard this story at this point, right? Graham Hancock has retreaded this one. If you've watched Ancient Apocalypse, that's what it is. Ancient Apocalypse is an updated version of Fingerprints of the Gods, you know? Oh, and I guarantee as I talk about this, I will accidentally say Fingerprints of the Gods when I mean Chariots of the Gods and vice versa. You know, it's like, oh God, the titles are so similar. And they're equally full of crap between the two. Okay. In terms of the writing style and stuff, Eric von Däniken in the 1968 one, his writing style is terrible. And it when you read through it, you're like, man, this needs an editor like really badly. I do think it may have been written in a different language at first and translated into English. But boy, right? You're like, these sentences aren't constructed well. This paragraph is like two sentences long. This just sort of basic grammar and flow are really horrible in Chariots of the Gods. And just the idea, some of it is, because it's 1968, some of it is so old and just stupid. I mean, the ideas themselves are foolish and a waste of time, but there's just an extra added bonus of like, what even is this steaming pile of shit, you know? Whereas Fingerprints of the Gods, see, I already did it. Fingerprints of the Gods, the Graham Hancock one, I will say this, and I say the same thing about Graham Hancock on his video stuff. If he wanted to do something good, he could. He is a fine writer. Like, Fingerprints of the Gods, there are passages and portions of it that are written very well. And just like when I was talking about the second season of video that I was just talking about, all these titles, you guys, they like swim through my head and they're all like so similar to his Netflix special, Ancient Apocalypse. God, why did it take me so long? His second season, I ruminated on the fact that he was talking about like the remains of settlement in the Amazon, and he could have done an actual real like documentary style video on the Amazon and done something good and done something with facts in it, but he wussed out and angled it towards his same old stupid super civilization thing. And it's just really too bad. And that's what I see. That's what I take out of Fingerprints of the Gods, because so much of it is just, man, you guys, I'll go through all this, but you've heard all this before. And not only have you heard it all before because you watched Ancient Apocalypse, you heard it all before because you read Chariots of the Gods. You heard it all before because actually all of it's a ripoff from Atlantis, the antediluvian world from 1881. You've heard it before because you've watched Ancient Aliens, right? You've heard it before because you've heard other YouTube pseudo-archaeologists say all this same crap, right? So I what's so funny is like, does that mean that Fingerprints of the Gods was ultimately a success? I don't know. I'm shocked, and I'm shocked it was as big of a seller as it is because it's so physically large and boring. Like, I'm like, how, man, you know, cause like, even if I was like at an airport going to buy a book, I'd be like, that looks just like too big. It's a big book. So I will say before I will do the kind of a chapter summary for in the next segment here. But before I go, I do want to say that the beginning of this book in the intro, Graham does the same thing he's now done for 30 years that he has to do, which he treats the reader very early on. He goes, look, you're a courageous person for reading this. You know, it takes real spunk. You are a gladiator for reading this, you know, like it takes real courage. You need to have courage like Ignatius Donnelly, the pioneer, and be able to speak out against the orthodoxy, against the intellectual adversity, right? And all of this hidden knowledge that he's about to give you will begin a paradigm shift that is irrevocably underway, right? He does that whole thing. And as I said that, a couple of those things I said were direct quotes from the book, but I obviously, you know, filled in for content. But that's the vibe. He always has to do it. The vibe is mainstream archaeologists, orthodox archaeologists. They have no idea. The term orthodox is super negative always in Graham Hancock world. You know, they don't know what they're doing. And I'm here to shine a light on the truth about ancient history, which has been kept from you by these lazy archaeologists, right? He has to do that. And, you know, he calls Ignatius Donnelly a pioneer. It's like, yeah, the pioneer who wrote Atlantis, the antediluvian world. Are you serious? When we get back, and oh, I'm sure you're going to stay with me, because if there's one thing in life you want, it's that you want me to go through the chapters of Fingerprints of the Gods. Oh, I'm doing it. Well, hello and welcome back to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, episode 168. And we are discussing Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods. And I'm sure the audience left after that break because you knew it was coming. And I, you know, when I do a review of a book like this or a movie or whatever it is, I think you guys know this at this point if you've listened to some of my stuff. I always do try and be positive. I always root for it in a way. You know, I want it to be a success. Like, I want it to ultimately have something good about it, because do any of us want to waste our time reading a book or watching a show that has like no salient qualities? You know what I mean? So, as I said in the last part, Graham Hancock is a decent writer, like good for him. You know, he could do good stuff if he wanted, but he instead is just too much of a salesman and shyster who wants to sell you this stupid crap. So before I go into all the chapters, to make it make sense, which I find that so much of this pseudo-archaeology crap just doesn't make sense, right? So here's how this is going to flow. And again, there's a bunch of chapters. I'm going to look in the book right now. It has, yes, friends, 52 chapters. 52 chapters. So I will not destroy you and be like, chapter 17. You know, I'm not going to do that. But what I will say is, here's how they chunk out. So, of course, he has like an introduction where he says, you know, archaeologists are terrible and you can't believe them. You need to believe this new secret knowledge because you're a courageous gladiator. Then he goes into the maps. Remember the Piri-Ris map crap? Oh, yeah, friends, we're going there. So he talks about, okay, his argument goes, all right, there's these maps that really show that Antarctica used to be warm. It shows that the Earth was much different than we think, you know, just several thousand years ago and at the time of the super civilization. And then from the maps, he goes on to, I think, sort of talk about sea travel. He talks about like the Inca a lot in this, but I think the idea is just that this ancient super civilization had sea travel to vast distances. And you can see examples of it in like South America. I think that's where he's going with that. And again, I'm not trying to be like obfuscate or whatever, it's very hard for me to understand where he's going sometimes, because he'll say stuff in his book where I'm like, wait, do you actually mean that? Wait, are you saying that in seriousness? Wait, we all know that's utter bullshit. Wait, what? Right. It can be confusing. So after he does the maps, then he's like, hey, look, there's evidence of wide-ranging sea travel for the ancient super civilization. Then he spends a long time on the Maya. And I, of course, was interested, being a Mayanist. I'm like, okay, how's he going to spin this? And he really just spends a lot of time on like the calendar and math and that kind of stuff to show that the Maya are super advanced. And I mean, the brown people there now, could they have done that? No. Super civilization taught them that, right? Then he moves on and spends a lot of time on myths worldwide with the idea of mythology as real, right? So if there's something like a great flood or, you know, a great volcanic eruption or earthquake or something, instead of those just being tools of a storyteller or mythology to push sort of a religious belief system or something, he's like, no, these are real, right? These are based on reality. So there actually was a flood, again, adding to his idea that there was a super civilization 12,000 years ago. So again, to tell you where we're going, he's like, there's maps that are based on how the continents used to be in different places that you don't think. There was evidence of this ancient civilization who had sea travel, and then the Maya evidence that they were really smart with calendars and math and advanced things. And there's more evidence because the myths from thousands of years ago are actually about real situations. Then he spends a long time on Egypt, of course. And, you know, the basic, like, and the stuff made in Egypt is too complex, so it couldn't be the brown people. These brown people, you know, they're everywhere and they never know how to do anything. You need a super civilization, my friend. So they do the whole thing about Egypt. And then at the end, he's basically like, yeah, and that's why there had to have been an ancient super civilization. That's the organization of the ideas. Okay. That's where he's going. And I have to say, it was such a hard read for me, you guys. And in honesty, of the 500 pages I read, I remember around the first 130, I read like really well. And all the stuff on the Maya, I read really well, just because I was curious, you know, because I knew that stuff. I knew all the sites. I'd been to so many of the sites and I was just curious what he was going to say. But I did skim in some of it because I'd heard the arguments before, you know. something like Pee Wee Reese map or Nazca lines. I've heard that so many. I've heard the Graham Hancock argument so many times that I felt okay to skim. I felt like it wasn't against the author because I literally had heard it in other forms. But I did spend a lot of time on this book. I just want to be honest. Okay, so how does this go chapter by chapter? Well, in the beginning, there's the map stuff, right? And he keeps bringing up this guy named Charles Hapgood. And Charles Hapgood was a researcher. And he really leans heavily on Charles Hapgood. If you Google Charles Hapgood and you read the first line from Wikipedia, Charles Hapgood was born in 1904 and he dies in 1982. So he's doing his stuff in like the, you know, 60s, 70s, that kind of thing. Charles Hutchins Hapgood was an American college professor and author who became one of the best known advocates of the pseudoscientific claim of a rapid and recent pole shift with catastrophic results. That's who Graham Hancock is hanging his hat on, right? And there's a handful of other guys like this as we go through here where you're like, oh, good Lord. And of course, Graham Hancock does this thing where he's like, oh, and they gave Charles Hapgood a cold shoulder, a man ahead of his time. Those are direct quotes. You know, that they cold shouldered. They just didn't listen to his genius. It's like, oh my God, dude. Yeah. Yeah. Rapid pole shift and Antarctica moved. We're on chapter like one and you see my pain. And I think you guys are feeling the pain too. I what's funny is I wrote little notes in the margins every so often. I wrote to myself, hard to read because I know it's utter BS. Do you want to deep dive a lie? Exactly right. You know, it's bullshit. And you're like, I don't want to deep dive in this. I don't want to try and prove it wrong because I know it's stupid and it's a waste of time. Oh, look, my next note is waste of time. I also put utterly untrustworthy and 1000 logical fallacies. Yeah. So there's that. Then he goes on to the Pee Wee Reese map. And there's another one called the Aurontius Phineus map. I believe it's all the same stuff. These are old maps. Well, by old, I mean like 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, that kind of stuff, where he's trying to show that somehow these early explorers mapped a non-glacial Antarctica. They mapped a green Antarctica, and it's just like stupid. Oh, I wrote to myself, over-explaining old shitty maps, meaning in meaninglessness. That's exactly right. That's what that is, right? You're just wasting time. Oh, the idea that the Pee Wee Reese map is so good that they had obviously figured out like longitude way before, many, many centuries before. It's like, no, they didn't. See, that's just a stupid lie, right? It's a waste of everyone's time. So, oh, I did put that he writes in a flowery and overdramatic style, which he kind of does. But dude, check this out. This book, if it was just a travel log, it would be pretty good. That's the best part of this book. The best part of Fingerprints with the Gods. Graham, I'm going to give you some serious kudos here. He's a fine travel writer because he and his wife actually visit a bunch of these places and he's at his strength when he talks about like driving in a Jeep with somebody or the difficulty of the hike or, you know, where they were staying or getting lost or whatever it may be. Like when he does that, I'm like, yeah, I'm with you, dude. That's awesome. He does well. If he just cut out all the bullshit and just talked about this traveling he did to these cool sites, it would be great. And it would make the book a ton shorter. Missed opportunity. Anyway, so he does the maps. Then he's moving on to the sort of like the sea connections, right? The idea that the ancient super civilization made it to Nazca. And this is the sort of the South America, the Inca part. Where first, of course, he says the Nazca lines are much older than we date them to. When we as archaeologists talk about the Nazca lines, they usually date to the first several centuries AD, like 300 AD or, you know, that kind of thing. But he's like, no. They're much older. I will say, and we have to remember this, that also that Graham Hancock does not talk about aliens. So he does not, he's not here to say the Nazca lines were runways for aliens. You gotta give him that. The guy is smart enough to, he never talks about aliens, right? He does not, that's not his deal. His deal is the ancient super civilization to teach all the brown people how to have civilization. He calls them like the civilizers. Oh man. And I will say, do I think Graham Hancock is a racist? No, I don't. But does he peddle in like racist ideology? Of course he does. You know, this stuff, this idea that that the current people in the Maya area or the Inca area, pick your poison, are just too stupid and backwards to have done the cool ancient stuff that their ancestors did. You know, it's ludicrous and it's sad. And he has, see, Graham Hancock is no fool. So in the past 20 years or so, he's definitely like tamped down that kind of rhetoric. He's kind of like muted it a lot, right? So, but at the bottom, it still is. It's still this idea that like this ancient super civilization needed to show these people how to do stuff. And it's just, it's to civilize them, you know, and it's just, it's dumb. Waste of our time. So from the Nazca lines, you know, oh, the Nazca lines are much, much, much older. And somehow I think he was relating it to the lines were done by map makers or something. It's pointless. Then he talks about like Cuzco, the Incas, Viracocha, who's like a god, you know, figure for the Inca. And of course he talks about Viracocha, this Inca god, as a civilizing white guy, you know, as a foreigner, right? And that idea is going to come back and back and back. Like this idea that they have a beard or they seem Western or, you know, they're not from this area. It just goes on and on and on. He goes onward to Machu Picchu. This is all in South America. And he starts talking about alignments. Graham Hancock talks about alignments like all the time. Alignments for me are one of the worst things that I hate in archaeology because so often they're meaningless. You can align anything to anything. You know what I'm saying? It's very easy to make alignments. And even real archaeologists, like, they have to watch out and not get caught up. I will believe alignments if they're very, very set in stone and obvious, like something like Stonehenge. Yes, that is, those are real alignments, right? And I've seen others. Certain Maya E groups. Yes, those are alignments. Those are real. And what I mean is alignments to like the summer solstice, winter solstice, this kind of stuff. There are a handful of those things, but this is one of Graham Hancock's greatest foolish moves, is he puts alignments on everything. And he tries to say that the alignments mean that these sites are much older. And the carbon 14, no, carbon 14 doesn't matter. It's the alignments. And he does that by working in precession. This is something he works into all this stuff. It's just an extra layer of bullshit. So precession is a real thing. Precession, like the earth does this thing called precession, meaning it wobbles on its axis a tiny bit. And the wobble takes 26,000 years to complete. It's a little bit, it's like 2 degrees. And what that means in reality for us is, like, right now, the North Pole, the North Star is directly over the North Pole, but it's only directly over for so long that the where the Earth's north points wobbles a little and it cruises around. It makes sort of a circle in the sky, but that cruise takes super slow. It's 26,000 years. In 26,000 years, it'll be back to the North Star. And it moves so slow that we will notice nothing in our lifetimes, right? It's one of those. But it just, it cruises around where the North will be away from the North Star just a little bit. Like, don't think that it goes all the way across the night sky or something. It'll be just a little bit. It makes this little circle in the sky. And one of Graham's arguments is, well, this stuff doesn't align to anything now, but 13,000 years ago, it aligned to north. It's like, oh my God. And that's why this 1,000-year-old site is actually 13,000 years old. It's like, oh my God, it's just so dumb. See, it just brings me down. You know, it's like, It's just, oh, I put some more notes in the margins. What did I write? Can't trust a thing. Statements made as if there is no other way to see it. Yeah, he constantly goes, and obviously that means this. You can only take this as this. No, you're just spouting horseshit. Oh, and with that, let's leave for a moment and then come back. Well, hello and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episodes 168. And we are talking about Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods. And all two of you in the audience who are left, you know, we can talk together in a little circle. I'm around chapter 7 or 8. Remember, there's 53 chapters. Don't worry, I'll cruise through these. It's pretty fast. So when we last left, we were in kind of South America and we were talking about how like alignments at Machu Picchu mean that the site was actually many, many, many thousands of years old because of precession. Oh, God, what a waste of time. And then he goes onward. He talks about Lake Titicaca a little bit. And I, this is one of those moments, you guys, where I'm not sure if he means this because it's so stupid. I'm like, wait, are you sure? So if Graham Hancock didn't mean this, I'm sorry, I took it wrong. But I think he was hinting, and he does this a lot. He's just sort of hints, or when you see interviews with him, he goes like, well, but what if, what about this? And wouldn't it be fascinating if, you know, and he just sort of blathers on. And this one is, I think that because of the continental shelf, like rising, that the ocean water, that Lake Titicaca actually had ocean water trapped in it as it rose. I think that's what he was at, which is like, just like, what? You know, anyway, I don't know. And moving on. But by this point, too, he's going to start to pour in the idea that some of the Inca mythology is very similar to the Egyptian mythology. I mean, it's so similar. I mean, the only solution is that it's from the same source. Yeah, whatever. He doubles down on the alignments plus precession equals super old dates, that some of these sites, of course, are much more ancient. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's Tiwanaku. This is a site in back to the South America world, the Inca world, as a port city, which is just weird. It doesn't make any sense because he has to try and prove a flood. So he's going to take a city that's, you know, not near the ocean and be like, well, it was supposed to be a port and it was a port before the ancient flood. I don't know. He moves on to the Maya world. He talks a lot about Chichen Itza. He talks about Maya sacrifice. He talks about some of the Aztec stuff that he talks about in a way that shows that he's not really looking at deep source material. This happens a lot, sort of a tourist version of stuff, because really that's what he is. You know, Graham Hancock is a tourist who visits sites and then writes crazy books. Nothing wrong with being a tourist. He has been many places. He has been there in person, but he is not an archaeologist. He doesn't spend time there. He doesn't do work there. He doesn't do research. He just looks around, which is fine, except he lies about it. He talks about Quetzalcoatl, again, comparing it to Viracocha, South America. Oh, they're all the same. He goes to Cholula, which is a site in Mexico. He talks about the Olmec. And for those of you who don't know, the Olmec are kind of the precursors to the Maya, right, in Central America. Most famous for the big stone heads, right? Those like megalithic stone heads, which of course he calls the Negroid heads, you know, and he's like, oh, well, you know, showing us that, of course, these are carvings meant to show Africans, you know. So the Olmec were carving the quote Negroid heads based on these Africans who came over, but they were civilized by the quote the civilizers, which were bearded Caucasians. I'm quoting this stuff, you guys. So he moves on to Palenque, which is a very pretty Maya site, one of my favorites. Just if you have time to go, I highly recommend. And then the Pakal's tomb thing. This is Graham at like his stupidest in terms of just silly. He actually goes with the Erich von Däniken thing to a degree. Erich von Däniken is most famous example of ancient astronauts, like real idiocy, is Pakal's sarcophagus lid. The idea that Pakal is carved as being sitting in a spacecraft, right? Because he's sitting similar to the Apollo astronauts. I was shocked that Graham would go with this idiocy. And to Graham's sad credit, I don't know, he hasn't really talked about this in many, many years. I think Graham has dropped this from his repertoire. But he, instead of saying that Pakal's an ancient astronaut in a spaceship, he says that Pakal is carved like operating a machine or a computer or this kind of thing. It's just all, that's just really dumb. And the idea that the world tree in the Maya world, which is symbolized as a cross, of course, Graham's going to go, oh, well, that shows that the Western crosses came over here. What are the chances of another culture independently coming up with the symbol you get when you put two sticks in a cross? Come on, man. He goes on to Teotihuacan, doubles down on the myths as reality, doubles down on like, hey, what about all these myths about waters and floods and earthquakes and volcanoes, right? And starts to pour in the whole ice age thing of like, hey, about 12,000 years ago, there was an ice age. And at that time, that's when the super civilization fell apart. He doubles down on the procession thing. He explains the procession thing. The procession takes 26,000 years. He doubles down on his solstice alignment stuff. Let's read from my margins. Let's see. Boring. Questions ludicrous. Obviously pointless. Do I want to look all this up? Waste of time. Crap. Extreme diffusion. Right. This is an example of this is the number one thing that pseudo-archaeologists do, which is they use the idea of extreme diffusion, the idea that all cultures are somehow interrelated, the idea that all complex ideas come from one super civilization deep in the depths of time and then diffuse to all the other civilizations, right? There's no such thing in this narrow mindset as independent invention. It's all like, it's all interrelated, right? Oh, yes. I've also written he does constant comparisons, left turns, and observations. Yeah. He just says, again, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if, doesn't this remind you of, you know, this kind of thing. And he just kind of twists out into space. He has a ton of cited works at the end, but the huge percentage of them are just bad. They're just crap. They're not real science. And I'm not here to tell you that reading scientific papers is my joy. You know, even archaeology ones, they can be very dense and boring in their own way, right? But they're real. I got to give that to my colleagues. My colleagues can write some boring shit, but it's real. This stuff is not real. And the cited works at the end of this book are basically a hilarious cherry pick fest where he doesn't cite the main books on all of this stuff, basically. I mean, I can really speak to the Maya stuff. The Maya stuff is just a stupid waste of time farce because it's just like old books, half cited. The main ones aren't. He's just making up a story. I've rewritten to myself, so much blather, deadly boring. He reiterates the Egypt stuff. Egypt's too complex. This, the stupid ass Sphinx is super old thing. The Sphinx is 10,000 years old or whatever. I am so sick of that one. It's so dumb. It's a waste of our time. The idea, again, this was weird to me. The idea that the Egyptians needed outside help for agriculture. Again, I could have gotten that wrong, but that's how it, what he seemed to be saying. Yeah, the Egyptians are too stupid. So the super civilization had to teach them how to do agriculture. And then what you learn if you're reading Fingerprints of the Gods is every time you start to see math, you're like, oh, no, because Graham also does those stupid calculations where it's like, well, if you take the diameter of the Great Pyramid and you multiply it by 3.216 and then you take the arc between the North Star and Sirius, then you divide it by three, right? They do that crap on the Joe Rogan podcast, when Flint Dibble did his masterful Graham Hancock takedown, Flint made fun of the math stuff. Flint did a couple math like examples using Graham Hancock's bullshit. Yeah, these are just those shystery math things. It's almost as stupid as, like, if you take this number and you divide it by two, like take your age, divide it by two, then multiply it by two. You know what you get? Get your age. Oh yeah. Right. It's not that stupid, but it's the same kind of thing where you're just, it's number mumbo jumbo. So he does that, which is again, a pure waste of your time. He writes at the end of the book, he writes how his own researcher quit. And basically, I think wrote him this note that just said, basically, what you're doing is crazy. There's no evidence for this. You know, this whole super civilization thing is impossible. And he wrote it in there as like a point of pride, I think. It was weird for me as sort of an outsider. I'm like, your researcher was right, dude. Like, what? Again, I'm just reporting. And then, of course, at the very end, he's like, look, if you need evidence for the super civilization, it's Antarctica, dude. Remember the beginning? Remember your good friend Charles Hapgood? You know, most famous for his pseudoscience claims? That, you see, the super civilization is underneath the ice in Antarctica, so you need to go over there. And so the idea that me as a real archaeologist needs to waste my time to do that bullshit, it's like, no, I'm not going to waste my time and then find nothing and then go on from there. And that's really the end. I know. I'm lying. The last page is he interviews like a Hopi wise man in Arizona, you know, and of course the Hopi guy's like, hey, we're doing bad things to our environment and we should all be better to the earth, is basically how it ends. I don't know what to tell you, but that's it. That's 53 chapters. That's over 500 pages. He has Graham being the shyster and fraud that he is. And, you know, it doesn't make me feel good. I don't like talking poorly about people. I don't. When I watch, like, there's certain YouTube shows and podcasts and stuff that talk poorly about people. I am not a fan of that crap, you guys. I'm really not. And so I've really had to battle myself in terms of how to talk about Graham Hancock, because I don't like accusing somebody of being a fraud or of a shyster. But God, man, he's a total fraud and a shyster. He just is. Like, that's a fact. Look at this ludicrous bullshit that he's been selling. That's just a retread. It's like a retread combo of mostly Ignatius Donnelly's Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, and then a sprinkling of Eric von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods, right? And so, I mean, huge portions of it are just like ripped from that stuff. I'm not here to say he plagiarized, but he just re-upped the same old ideas and stuck a travelogue onto it. And the travelogue part's good. So I don't know. You know, it's so hard for me to say, but that's the deal. That's what you're getting here. And so there have been a handful of people who've taken up Graham Hancock who have learned from his fraud. And they do that same thing on YouTube or, you know, pick your social media poison. And it's sad. It's too bad that this stuff continues to sell. I mean, I get shades of like Curse of Oak Island in this, you know. It's where, since they're focused on nothing, since it's just complete bullshit, you are just drilling into nothing, literally. I mean, how many times on this podcast have I said the term waste of time? It's really what it is. And I'm of two minds in this, because Graham Hancock keeps me employed in the pseudo-archaeology podcast. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's an utter waste of time. Read books on real archaeology. Visit a real archaeological site. Listen to real archaeologists. Learn real history. Don't waste your time with a shyster and a fraud and of anyone on earth the guy who puts pseudo into pseudo archaeology. And with that, I'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Pawnee_archaeologist, and you can also email me at greatplainsarchpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, anybody can love the mountains, but it takes a soul to love the prairie. American author Willa Cather.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.